We want to begin our time of study from the Word of God tonight in Hebrews chapter 9, looking at verses 1 through 5, Hebrews 9, 1 through 5, wherein he is harking back to things that were done under the law of Moses. He's going to make a contrast with those things, with what we have in Christ Jesus in the New Testament. But he begins there in Hebrews 9, verse 1, saying, "Then verily the first covenant had also ordinances of divine service and a worldly sanctuary, for there was a tabernacle made, the first wherein was the candlestick and the table and the showbread, which is called the sanctuary, and after the second veil, the tabernacle, which is called the holiest of all, which had the golden censer and the ark of the covenant overlaid round about with gold, wherein was the golden pot that had manna and Aaron's rod that budded and the tables of the covenant. And over it the cherubim of glory, shadowing the mercy seat, of which we cannot now speak particularly." So even at the time of the writing of the book of Hebrews, some 2,000 years ago, they could not speak particularly with exact knowledge of the appearance of those things that had been in that first, in that original tabernacle, and then that first temple that Solomon had made. And the Ark of the Covenant was no more by this point. So those were things that they didn't know from any firsthand experience. And this was actually prophesied in the book of Jeremiah, if we can go back to the Old Testament, to the book of Jeremiah in chapter 3. And this is actually a New Testament prophecy, but he's going to mention some of these things of the Old Testament, some of those things that were mentioned right there in Hebrews 9, and speak of a time that was coming in which they would not be able to speak of those things particularly, as he said there in Hebrews 9 and verse 5, when those things would not be remembered anymore. Jeremiah 3 verses 14 through 17, he says, "Turn, O backsliding children, saith the Lord, for I am married unto you, and I will take you one of a city and two of a family, and I will bring you to Zion. And I will give you pastors according to mine heart, which shall feed you with knowledge and understanding. And it shall come to pass, when you be multiplied and increased in the land, in those days, saith the Lord, they shall say no more, the ark of the covenant of the Lord, neither shall it come to mind, neither shall they remember it, neither shall they visit it, neither shall it, that be done any more. At that time they shall call Jerusalem the throne of the Lord, and all nations shall be gathered unto it, to the name of the Lord, to Jerusalem, neither shall they walk any more after the imagination of their evil heart." And of course, the gospel went forth beginning in the city of Jerusalem, that physical city of Jerusalem, but in Hebrews chapter 12, 22 and 23, we see a reference to the church there as being that heavenly Jerusalem, and we can see he's clearly looking towards that time in which there was going to be that spiritual nation of Israel, when all nations, all the physical nations of the world would be included in it, Gentiles as well as Jews. And so this is a New Testament prophecy and even includes the organization of the church in that prophecy with those elders in the church, those ones who would be leading the flock and feeding them with knowledge and understanding. So he's foretelling the work of elders even in this particular passage and what they would be doing with God's people in the time of the New Testament. But he mentions there with that, that those things of the Old Testament, including the Ark of the Covenant and all those things that were so central to the things that they knew and practiced during this time, that those things would not be remembered anymore. Those things would not be done anymore. And that is the case, of course, as part of the New Testament. We don't know in particular about those things, just as we were reading in the book of Hebrews in chapter 9. But we can go back to the scriptures that speak about those things in the Old Testament, and also some references in the New Testament about those things, and learn some very important lessons about many of those different items that were part of the Old Testament practices under the law of Moses. Tonight we want to look at some particular things that pertain to the Ark of the Covenant, inside the Ark of the Covenant. We already saw that verse 4 of Hebrews 9 where he mentioned three particular or specific items that were included inside the Ark of the Covenant. But let's go back to the book of Exodus to chapter 25. And this is the chapter where God first commanded that the Ark of the Covenant be made. That word ark just means a box. But this would be, and we know of it as the Ark of the Covenant. And we'll see why here with that first item that he mentions that would be placed in it. In Exodus chapter 25, let's read verses 10 through 16. Here is God's commandment for them to build this ark. It says, And they shall make an ark of shittim wood. 2 cubits and a half shall be the length thereof, and 1.5 cubits the breadth thereof, and 1.5 cubits the height thereof. And we can have an idea about its dimensions from that. A cubit being a measurement from a grown man's elbow to tip of the finger, which is about 18 inches. So a cubit would be 1.5 feet in length. And so 1.5 cubits, that's 1.5 feet plus 0.5 feet. So another 9 inches. So that's about a little over 2 feet, 2 feet, 3 inches, isn't that right? So that would be what 1.5 cubits would be. So you can kind of get an idea of the size of that from those dimensions that are mentioned there. So he said that would be made. And then verse 11 says, "And thou shalt overlay it with pure gold. Within and without shalt thou overlay it. And thou shalt make upon it a crown of gold round about. And thou shalt cast 4 rings of gold for it, and put them in the 4 corners thereof. And 2 rings shall be on the one side, in the one side of it, and 2 rings in the other side of it. And thou shalt make staves of shittim wood, and overlay them with gold. And thou shalt put the staves into the rings by the sides of the ark, that the ark may be borne with them," that is, carried with them. Now note that God's already telling in that commandment to make the ark, he includes the rings there and mentions the staves that should be made. That would be the way the ark should be carried. So God is already commanding it to be made and commanding and authorized the manner in which that ark would be carried. He continues on there in verse 15, says, "The staves shall be in the rings of the ark, they shall not be taken from it, and thou shalt put into the ark the testimony which I shall give thee." So even before it was made, God said that ark was going to contain the testimony. It was going to contain those tables of stone wherein God would write those commandments that he gave to Moses in Mount Sinai. So it would be the tables with the Ten Commandments. That would be placed within the Ark of the Covenant. And that's exactly what happened. In verses 17 through 20, he then gives a commandment about the making of the mercy seat and the cherubims, which would be absolutely connected with the placement of the ark in the most holy place in the tabernacle. But then down to verse 21 here in Exodus 25, he says, "And thou shalt put the mercy seat above upon the ark, and in the ark thou shalt put the testimony that I shall give thee." So he says it again, just as he finished up in verse 16. And we also, therefore, know of this ark in its reference as the Ark of the Testimony. It's referred to that numerous times, especially. That's the most common term for it in the book of Exodus. In those references in Exodus 25, it's also in Exodus chapter 26, verses 33, 34. Chapter 30 of Exodus, verses 6 and 26, and then Exodus 31, verse 7, and chapter 39, verse 35, and then chapter 40, verses 3 and 5. And I know I rattled off a bunch of references. If you were writing those, fine. If you want them later, I can give them to you if you missed a couple, or you can listen to the recording when it makes it onto the website. But at any rate, it's just to give you the idea of how often we see reference to the ark as being the Ark of the Testimony. It's also called the Ark of the Covenant, a very similar word, because of what was placed in it. That was where God's testimony, his covenant with Israel, was placed, there within the ark. And we see the Ark of the Covenant as the common reference, or the way it's described in the books of Numbers, Leviticus, Deuteronomy, Joshua, 1 Samuel, etc. And I'll spare you right now all the references there, but they're easy to look up. But that's what the Ark was referred to most often, the Ark of the Testimony, the Ark of the Covenant. Within it would be placed those tables, that testimony, that covenant that God gave to the children of Israel, symbolized with those tables of stone with the Ten Commandments that were written on it. And this was done as God had commanded. Let's turn to Exodus chapter 40, the last chapter of the book, Exodus chapter 40. In verse 17 of Exodus 40, It says, And it came to pass in the first month, in the second year, on the first day of the month, that the tabernacle was reared up. Now you can go back to Exodus 12, where God first commanded Israel to number their year, starting with that year, that day for that first month when they came up out of Egypt. So we can know from this is exactly a year later. So this precisely 1 year after the time of the Exodus from Egypt, here God is having given the commandment to make these things. And on that particular day, the tabernacle was set up. So it was not by accident. So the very first year they had, they left Egypt. On their second New Year's Day that they ever had as a nation, they reared up the tabernacle. And of course, the Ark of the Covenant was there within it. And in verses 20 and 21 here of Exodus chapter 40, it says, and he took, this is speaking of Moses, and he took and put the testimony into the ark and set the staves on the ark and put the mercy seat above upon the ark. And he brought the ark into the tabernacle and set up the veil of the covering and covered the ark of the testimony as the Lord commanded Moses. So the tabernacle was reared up on that day, and that's the same day that Moses put that those tables of stone within it and then put the ark in its place in the most holy place of the tabernacle. So that was all done there on that first day of the year, in that second year for them, as recorded there in Exodus chapter 40. Now later in the book of Deuteronomy in chapter 10, Moses is going to refer to this time again, when the ark was put in its place and the tables of the testimony were placed within it. In Deuteronomy 10, verses 1 through 5, he says, "At that time the Lord said unto me, hew thee two tables of stone like unto the first." Well, this is after he had cast down the first set. He went up into Mount Sinai for 40 days and 40 nights. There he had written upon the tables the Ten Commandments, and then he came down from the mountain with those tables of stone, and God told him, while he was still on the mount, what the people were doing down at the foot of the mount. He was gone for 40 days and 40 nights, and what did the people say? They said, "We don't know what's become of this Moses." And so they pressed upon Aaron, the high priest, and compelled him to make a golden calf. They used all those jewels, that spoil that God had let them come out of Egypt with, which had been something he had prophesied that he was going to do for them. Way back, you can go back to Genesis 15 and see that God told them how they were going to come out of that nation that would have them in bondage and mistreat them for 400 years, and then they were going to come out with great substance, something that God considered important enough to speak before to Abraham himself, the father of that nation, 400 years before it came to pass. Then he repeated that promise to Moses when he spoke to him from the burning bush in Exodus 3. He fulfilled all of that when you get to Exodus chapter 14. Came out of Egypt, out of their bondage, with all that great substance. They have all those jewels of gold and everything. They melt that down and make a golden calf and say, this is our God that brought us up out of Egypt. And they start worshiping that golden calf. That's what was going on while Moses was in the mount getting the Ten Commandments from God. And so when he got down the foot of the mountain, saw that, Moses cast down those tables and they break. And so he went back up into the mountains. That's what he's back into the mountain, and that's what he's referring to here in Deuteronomy 10:1. "At that time the Lord said unto me, hew thee two tables of stone like unto the first." So here's the second set now. It says, "And come up unto me into the mount, and make thee an ark of wood, and I will write on the tables the words that were in the first tables which thou breakest, and thou shalt put them in the ark. And I made an ark of shittim wood, and hewed two tables of stone like unto the first, and went up into the mount, having the two tables in mine hand. And he wrote on the tables, according to the first writing, the Ten Commandments which the Lord spake unto you in the mount out of the midst of the fire in the day of assembly, and the Lord gave them unto me. And I turned myself and came down from the mount and put the tables in the ark which I had made, and there they be, as the Lord commanded me." So that's the central item that was placed in the Ark of the Covenant. There are other references to that at the time of the dedication of Solomon's temple. in 1 Kings 8 and 2 Chronicles 6. Solomon also, at that time when he brought the ark into that new temple, made reference to the fact that it contained those tables that God had given to Moses. So there's several references to that item being placed within the Ark of the Covenant. Very central to it, even its name, again, being referred to as the Ark of the Testimony, Ark of the Covenant. So the fact that it contained the Word of God, that covenant that God made with His people Israel, according to His promises, that was a vital item to be in that Ark of the Covenant. Well, why was it in there? Well, one of the things it says about it, back where we read a while ago in Exodus chapter 25, if we can go back there for a moment to Exodus 25 and look at let's read verses 21 and 22 there, Exodus 25, verses 21 and 22. And thou shalt put the mercy seat above upon the ark, and in the ark thou shalt put the testimony that I shall give thee, and there I will meet with thee. And I will commune with thee from above the mercy seat, from between the two cherubim which are upon the ark of the testimony, of all things which I will give thee in commandment unto the children of Israel. So why did God have that ark in the most holy place and have the tables of the testimony within it? Well, he said that's where, the first thing he says is that's where he would meet with Israel. He would meet with the people of Israel there. Well, let's turn to Joshua chapter 20 and see an example of this in practice. Joshua chapter 20, verses 26 through 28. Joshua 20, 26 through... I have a wrong reference there, because there's not 26 verses in Joshua 20. All right, let's see. I had Joshua, it's supposed to be Judges, chapter 20, verses 26 through 28. Sorry about that. Judges 20, 26 through 28. Then all the children of Israel and all the people went up and came into the house of God and wept and sat there before the Lord and fasted that day until even and offered burnt offerings and peace offerings before the Lord. And the children of Israel inquired of the Lord, for the ark of the covenant of God was there in those days. And Phinehas, the son of Eleazar, the son of Aaron, stood before it in those days, saying, shall I yet again go out to battle against the children of Benjamin, my brother, or shall I cease? And the Lord said, go up, for tomorrow I will deliver them into thine hand. Well, the people were very sorrowful at this time. They were battling against a tribe of their own nation that had gone into rebellion, the tribe of Benjamin. We won't go into all the details of that right now. But that started in Judges chapter 19 when he starts to give the details of that particular situation. But anyway, we can see when they were needing to know whether to continue this battle with Benjamin, where do they go? Well, here the high priest goes there before the Ark of the Covenant, and there God meets with them and tells the high priest what the children of Israel should do. So there's an example, as God said, He would meet with them there. So based upon that covenant He made with them, those commandments that He gave to them, that would be the basis upon which He would meet with the Israelites, that He would be there with them, that He would direct them and give them commandment concerning the things that they should do. Let's look in, considering verse 22 there in Exodus 25 that we read a moment ago. He said that's where He would commune with them. That word is speak. He would speak with them there, just like we saw there in Judges chapter 20. But there's an important principle to that. Now, back in Deuteronomy, let's go back to the book of Deuteronomy chapter 4. Deuteronomy chapter 4. And God is speaking here about the importance of His Word to the people of Israel, those commandments that He gave to the Israelites that were symbolized there with the tables of stone that were placed within the Ark of the Covenant. Deuteronomy 4, beginning in verse 5. Behold, I have taught you statutes and judgments, even as the Lord my God commanded me, that you should do so in the land, whether you go to possess it. Keep therefore and do them, for this is your wisdom and your understanding in the sight of the nations, which shall hear all these statutes and say, surely this great nation is a wise and understanding people. For what nation is there so great who hath God so nigh unto them as the Lord our God is in all things that we call upon Him for? And what nation is there so great that hath statutes and judgments so righteous as all this law which I set before you this day? Only take heed to thyself and keep thy soul diligently, lest thou forget the things which thine eyes have seen, and lest they depart from thy heart all the days of thy life. But teach them thy sons and thy sons' sons, especially the day that thou stoodest before the Lord thy God in Horeb, when the Lord said unto me, Gather me the people together, and I will make them hear my words, that they may learn to fear me all the days that they shall live upon the earth, and that they may teach their children. And you came near and stood under the mountain, and the mountain burned with fire under the midst of heaven with darkness, clouds, and thick darkness. And the Lord spake unto you out of the midst of the fire. You heard the voice of the words, but saw no similitude, only you heard a voice. And he declared unto you this covenant which he commanded you to perform, even 10 commandments. And he wrote them upon 2 tables of stones. And the Lord commanded me at that time to teach you statutes and judgments, that you might do them in the land where you go over to possess it. So here is God referring through Moses, referring back to that time when he gave them those stones that were placed in that Ark of the Covenant. There was no other nation that had such a thing as that. God had not spoken and given his word to any other nation like he had to his people Israel, as he had promised to Abraham and Isaac and Jacob. They were the heirs of those promises to the fathers, and God spoke that great those great words and gave that great covenant to the people Israel. Verses 32 through 40 here in the same fourth chapter of Deuteronomy. For ask now in the days that are past, which were before thee, since the day that God created man upon the earth, and ask from one side of heaven unto the other, whether there hath been any such thing as this great thing is, or hath been heard like it. Did ever people hear the voice of God speaking out of the midst of the fire as thou hast heard and live? Or hath God assayed to go and take him a nation from the midst of another nation, by temptations, by signs, and by wonders, and by war, and by a mighty hand, and by a stretched out arm, and by great terrors, according to all that the Lord your God did for you in Egypt before your eyes? Unto thee it was showed that thou mightest know that the Lord, he is God, there is none else beside him. Out of heaven he made thee to hear his voice, that he might instruct thee, and upon earth he showed thee his great fire. And thou heardest his words out of the midst of the fire, and because he loved thy fathers, therefore he chose their seed after them, and brought thee out in his sight with his mighty power out of Egypt, to drive out nations from before thee greater and mightier than thou art, to bring thee in, to give thee their land for an inheritance, as it is this day. Know therefore this day, and consider it in thine heart, that the Lord, he is God, in heaven above and upon the earth beneath, there is none else. Thou shalt keep, therefore, his statutes and his commandments, which I command thee this day, that it may go well with thee and with thy children after thee, and that thou mayest prolong thy days upon the earth, which the Lord thy God giveth thee forever. That's why those tables were in the ark. That's what was so important about that. This was God's reminder to the people that they were under his covenant. He had given them his law, his commandments, that they must not ever forget. And so here they have the Ark of the Covenant, with those tables in there, with that symbol, that reminder ever present before them that they are under that covenant with God, and they're responsible for remembering his commandments and keeping all of those commandments that he gave to them. Now, how else would God continue to be speaking with them, to meet with them as he promised he would do there before that ark that contained those tables of stone, if they didn't remember his words and keep his commandments? Well, here's what God said later when they did forget. In Amos chapter 3, if you turn to the book of Amos chapter 3, and let's read verses 1 through 3 there. Hear this word that the Lord hath spoken against you, O children of Israel, against the whole family which I brought up from the land of Egypt, saying, You only have I known of all the families of the earth. Now, does that sound familiar to what we were just reading in Deuteronomy 4? He's reminding them of that very same thing again, but notice how he continues here in verse 2. Therefore, I will punish you for all your iniquities. Can two walk together except they be agreed? Now, those tables of testimony were in that ark to remind them to continue to be in agreement with God. Well, how do you stay in agreement with God? You stay in agreement with God by keeping the words that he's commanded. When God says to go one way and they're going off another way, they're not in agreement anymore. It wasn't that God changed and left them. They were the ones that changed and left the Lord. Now, can two walk together except they be agreed? How can you have two people going in two different directions down two different roads be walking together? That doesn't make sense. That can't be. So what needed to happen? Well, they needed to come back to the Lord to walk with him in agreement again by their submitting to him and keeping his commandments. So he's reminding them and calling them back to do that. Those tables of stone in the Ark of the Covenant was to be a reminder to keep them from going astray like they did. They did it anyway, but God had done everything to encourage them and to remind them to continue to keep his commandments. Let's turn to the New Testament because the same principle is there for us, and that's what we need to focus in on for ourselves. Let's turn to 1 John chapter 1. 1 John chapter 1. Let's notice what he teaches here in verses 5 and 6 of 1 John 1. This then is the message which ye have heard of him, and declare unto you that God is light, and in him is no darkness at all. If we say that we have fellowship with him and walk in darkness, we lie and do not the truth. So God is light, there's no darkness in him. Now, if we say that we have fellowship, that's the word partnership. Just like he was speaking of in Amos. If we're in partnership, we're walking together. Well, can two walk together except they be agreed? No, they can't. They couldn't in the Old Testament. They still can't. So for us to be in agreement with God, he is light and in him is no darkness at all. What do we have to do? What do we have to walk in? We have to walk in the light. Can there be any darkness in us? If we're walking in darkness, if we say that we're walking with God and we're walking in darkness and there's no darkness in him, we're telling a lie. We can't walk with God who is light if we're in darkness. There is no communion between light and darkness. That's the same point he makes in that passage in 2 Corinthians chapter 6 in verses 14 through 18. But there's no communion between, no fellowship between light and darkness. To be in agreement with God, we have to walk in the light, which is walking by his commandments. So he's teaching us that same principle that we were reminded of way back there in the Old Testament when he put those commandments of his that he had given to the nation of Israel in that Ark of the Covenant. Well, when we turn to the book of Hebrews, and we see how that book begins in Hebrews 1, verses 1 and 2, we're going to see how we're even held to a greater level or degree of responsibility for keeping the words that God has spoken to us than they were, the words that he spoken to them through Moses that they had preserved on those tables of stone in the Ark of the Covenant. Well, we see how serious that was back then. Well, let's see what he says here in Hebrews 1, 1 and 2. God, who at sundry times and in divers manners spake in time past unto the fathers by the prophets, hath in these last days spoken unto us by his Son, whom he hath appointed heir of all things, by whom also he made the worlds. Who is he spoken unto us through? Through his own Son. Does that bring a greater level of responsibility for us? Well, that's the point where he picks up in chapter 2, verse 1. Therefore, because he's spoken unto us today by his Son Jesus Christ in the new covenant, he says we ought to give the more earnest heed to the things which we have heard, lest at any time we should let them slip. For if the word spoken by angels was steadfast, and every transgression and disobedience received a just recompense of reward, did it? Did God punish them when they didn't keep his commandments in the Old Testament? Every one of those transgressions he punished. We can read page after page after page of that record. We just had a glimpse of it a moment ago in Amos. But God rebuked them and punished them time and time and time again for their disobedience. And that's not because it teaches us there was a different kind of God back then in the Old Testament so that we can be so thankful we don't have that kind of God anymore in the New Testament. God hasn't changed. He says, I am the Lord. I am Jehovah. I change not. He states that in the book of Malachi, in chapter 4 and chapter 3 in verse 6. So God does not change. His nature hasn't changed. That's why in Romans 11:22 he tells us to behold the goodness and the severity of God. He was good and severe in the Old Testament. He was good to those who continued in his goodness and kept his commandments. He was severe to the ones who rebelled. Well, God's still the same. In fact, he says we ought to give the more earnest heed to what we've heard, lest we should let them slip. Because if God punished every transgression and disobedience, then, he says in verse 3 here of Hebrews chapter 2, how shall we escape if we neglect so great salvation, which at the first began to be spoken by the Lord and was confirmed unto us by them that heard him? Well, how are we going to escape? We won't. That's his point. So we need to remember that lesson from those words of God being preserved in the Ark of the Covenant as that reminder for them to keep his word. And we need to listen to the words that he's spoken to us through his Son Jesus Christ and not forget anything he has told us. It also bears mentioning that not only were the Ten Commandments placed within the Ark, that wasn't all there was to it. Let's turn to the book of Deuteronomy again, to chapter 31. Deuteronomy chapter 31, and let's read verses 24 through 27. What else did they have to remind them to keep his commandments? They had an entire copy of the law that was placed in the side of the Ark of the Covenant. So it was the Ten Commandments, those tables of stone within it, but they also had a copy of the law that was preserved there in its side that had the whole thing. Again, as a reminder to them, here's what God has said, that we have to keep his word. Let's see Deuteronomy 31, verses 24 through 27. And it came to pass when Moses had made an end of writing the words of this law in a book until they were finished, that Moses commanded the Levites, which bear the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord, saying, take this book of the law and put it in the side of the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord your God, that it may be there for a witness against thee. For I know thy rebellion and thy stiff neck. Behold, while I am yet alive with you, this day you've been rebellious against the Lord, and how much more after my death? So they were going to have a copy of the law there in the side of the Ark of the Covenant. So when they weren't doing it anymore, how could they say, well, we didn't know that we were supposed to do that. We forgot that you told us this. What would the Lord say? There's a witness against you right there in the side of the Ark of the Covenant. The Ten Commandments are inside it, and their whole book of the law is there. You know, they had those scrolls. It would be right there in the side of the Ark, all that God had said that they weren't doing. So we need to remember that and not fall into condemnation by God because we've neglected this great salvation that he's given to us and spoke to us through his Son, Jesus Christ. A couple of other items that were in the Ark of the Covenant. There was that pot of manna. He also mentions that in Hebrews 9 and verse 4 that was within it. The manna first fell in Exodus chapter 16 when they were in the wilderness. They came out of Egypt, they were in the wilderness, and they immediately started murmuring and complaining because they didn't have food and they didn't have water. As if God could not, in fact, they even said, can he furnish a table in the wilderness? The one that had brought all those plagues upon Egypt, those 10 plagues, and then parted the Red Sea, led them through it on dry land, closed the sea upon the Egyptians, and they got out of their bondage with all that substance of the Egyptians in their possession. He did all that, and he wasn't going to be able to feed them and give them water in the wilderness. They had no faith at all, even after God had done all that he had. And so God made the manna fall on 6 days out of every week, every day but the Sabbath day on Saturday, and they would gather two times the amount. He would give them twice the amount on Friday, so it would cover 2 days' worth, and he would preserve it so it wouldn't rot. Because if they left it over in the other days, it would rot and spoil. But he would give them 2 days' worth on Friday that would cover both days, and it would stay preserved. So he gave them 7 days' worth of food by that manna every day. And, of course, they complained about having that same food every day. And there are few things that irritate me more than as a father than when if I hear my kids complaining about having to eat leftovers or having to eat this again or being picky about their food. That's not a good habit to fall into when we're not being thankful to God for whatever it is that we have. And we all need to be reminded of that. And that's one of the things he reminds us of right there with that pot of manna that God told Moses to have to place there in the Ark of the Testimony in Exodus chapter 16, verses 31 through 34. Exodus 16, 31 through 34. It says, and the house of Israel called the name thereof manna, and it was like coriander seed, white, and the taste of it was like wafers made with honey. And Moses said, this is the thing which the Lord commanded, fill an omer of it to be kept for your generations, that they may see the bread wherewith I have fed you in the wilderness when I brought you forth from the land of Egypt. And Moses said unto Aaron, take a pot and put an omer full of manna therein, and lay it up before the Lord to be kept for your generations, as the Lord commanded Moses. So Aaron laid it up before the testimony to be kept. And as he mentions there in Hebrews 9 and verse 4, that was one of those three items that was there in the Ark of the Covenant, that golden pot with the manna in it. So that was another reminder to Israel of God's provisions for them, how God had sustained them through the wilderness with a daily miracle that he provided for them. So he had done all that to sustain them. So he gave them the law. He fed them, gave them everything that they needed physically. He did all those miracles, all of that witness that God bore that showed that Moses was his prophet, that this was his word, all of these things so that they would learn God and his ways. Did they remember that? Well, they didn't. They didn't remember that. They continued to murmur and complain. That generation continued to tempt him and provoke him. until he would not allow that generation to enter into, number one, the land of Canaan. They wandered in the wilderness for 40 years until they died out. But most importantly, he swore in their wrath that they would not enter into his rest, as it's recorded in Psalm 95. This then repeated in Hebrews chapters 3 and 4, where he speaks of that rest of God in eternity. They would not be able to enter into heaven. They lost their souls over this. And in the New Testament, in John chapter 6, when Jesus fed the 5,000 with that great miracle that he did at that time, that's recorded in Matthew, Mark, Luke, and here in John 6. Here's one of those miracles, and it's rare that we have the record of one of his miracles in all four Gospels. We do with the feeding of the 5,000 that's recorded in the first 14 verses of John chapter 6. But after that miracle was over, and it says at the end of that, verse 13, that when they gathered the fragments that were left, in verse 14, when they saw that miracle that Jesus did, they said, "This is of a truth, that prophet that should come into the world." Well, the purpose of that miracle was accomplished, as for the ones that saw it and then believed that fact based upon that testimony that God gave to his son. This is that prophet that should come into the world. Jesus was sent by God. He was not speaking his own words. God proved that with those miracles that he did, and this being one of the notable ones here, when he fed that 5,000. Well, then he went into a ship to the other side and came over to Capernaum. When he got over there to that side, that area of the seashore to Capernaum, then the people that were on the other side in verse 22 here of John 6, they saw there wasn't any other boat there. They knew he was gone. So then they came to Capernaum seeking for Jesus in verse 24. And in verse 25, when they had found him on the other side of the sea, they said unto him, "Rabbi, when camest thou hither?" Jesus answered them and said, "Verily, verily, I say unto you, you seek me not because you saw the miracles, but because you did eat of the loaves and were filled. Labor not for the meat which perisheth, but for that meat which endureth unto life, everlasting life, which the Son of Man shall give unto you, for him hath God the Father sealed." Then said they unto him, "What shall we do that we might work the works of God?" Jesus answered and said unto him, "This is the work of God, that you believe on him whom he hath sent." They said therefore unto him, "What sign showest thou then that we may see and believe thee? What dost thou work? Our fathers did eat manna in the desert, as it is written, he gave them bread from heaven to eat." Now notice how they're arguing with him. Jesus understood that they were coming, this group of people, they were coming for the loaves and fishes. They were coming for food. And when he's pointing at that out, that they're coming just to be fed with physical food, and these people aren't understanding the meaning of the miracle and listening to him as one sent from God, then they are coming back here with this argument. Well, look, Moses, it says that Moses fed them, gave them bread from heaven to eat. So that's what a prophet is supposed to do, is feed the people. So they're arguing that, bringing that back to him, saying, "What's your proof? If you're really a prophet, you're going to feed us like Moses fed them." I mean, that's the point they're making. They're not listening to him. So then Jesus said to them in verse 32, "Verily, verily, I say unto you, Moses gave you not that bread from heaven, but my Father giveth you the true bread from heaven. For the bread of God is he which cometh down from heaven and giveth life unto the world." Now, would we have gotten frustrated with that response that they gave to him? I have a feeling I know a little bit about me, and I'm pretty confident I would not have responded like he did there. I would have gotten more than likely gotten pretty frustrated with that response. But look at how gentle he is and how meek he is in working with these people here, and points out that the kind of bread that Moses gave to the people, that manna that fell, that's not the bread from heaven. And the bread from heaven is the one who gives life into the world. And then in verse 34, they said to him, "Lord, evermore give us this bread." Now they're starting to listen. And so in verse 35, Jesus said to them, "I am the bread of life. He that cometh to me shall never hunger, and he that believeth on me shall never thirst. But I said unto you that you also have seen me and believe not." So he's encouraging them to believe in him. That miracle is the proof that he is that bread from heaven. So do they need a miracle of more food? They already had that. And that very miracle with food proved that he was the one God sent. He's that bread from heaven. That if we believe on him and obey him, we'll have everlasting life. That's that true bread from heaven. They said, Lord, evermore give us this bread. That's the kind of bread that we should be seeking also. A little bit further down in verse 58 here in John chapter 6, Jesus said again, this is that bread which came down from heaven, not as your fathers did eat manna and are dead. He that eateth of this bread shall live forever. So there was a reminder that God put in the Ark of the Covenant with that pot of the actual manna. But he's telling us there's a much greater bread than that. Jesus Christ is that bread of life. And then we have that great promise of God in Revelation chapter 2 and verse 17. In the last book of the Bible, Revelation chapter 2 and verse 17. He that hath an ear, let him hear what the Spirit saith unto the churches. To him that overcometh will I give to eat of the hidden manna, and will give him a white stone, and in the stone a new name written, which no man knoweth, saving he that receiveth it. That hidden manna. So he's speaking there again of where we will be in eternity and what he's going to be providing for our eternal needs in heaven with him. And that's a promise given to him that overcomes. We want to have next Sunday night. We have another half of this because we have one more item that was in the Ark of the Covenant, Aaron's rod that budded. But also some points to consider about the fact that those items that were in the Ark were items that they knew were in the Ark, but except for the ones that were around when they first were put in there, the other people from all the other generations from that point onward, they never got to see those things because they couldn't look in the Ark. And there's some points about that, about what they were responsible for believing, even though they hadn't seen it with their own eyes, because God had provided the witness of things that they hadn't actually seen with their own eyes. Things for us to consider along those same lines. So we want to look at another bit of this particular lesson next Sunday night, Lord willing. But we need to remember those words there and the promise that he gives based on that condition, to him that overcomes. That's our goal. We have to believe in his son, Jesus Christ. All these things we've been looking at, it's continually come back to that. These words that he's spoken to us through his son that we must not neglect. These words that he's spoken to us from that one who is the bread of life from heaven. That bread that we need to take in within ourselves. That one that we need to believe. That we need to eat his flesh and drink his blood. He needs to be taken within us. He needs to be within us. Christ in you, which is the hope of glory. Colossians chapter 1 and verse 27. That is what we need to be striving for. That he will be in us. That we will be conformed to his image. And that we will then be able to overcome all things. Then we can eat of that hidden manna. Then we can be with him in eternity. But that can only happen if you believe in him and obey him. And the question for you tonight is, have you become a disciple of the Lord? Have you become a child of God by obeying the gospel of Christ, repenting and being baptized, immersed in him for the remission of your sins, confessing your faith in him before men? If you have not yet done that, this is an opportunity for you to do that. We're encouraging you to do that now. If you are a Christian, but if you have not been following him as you should, if you need to repent of that and come back to him tonight, you have this opportunity to come now also. So we're encouraging anyone that needs to respond to the Lord's invitation here tonight to come forward right now while we stand together and sing.